Chapter 36. Explain the difference between what is public and what is private. Lashley divided the board into two panels and placed the key words on either side. Ron had finished the assignment but saw no connection between it and the question. Private is what you don't want people to know, and public is what it's okay for them to know, said the long-haired blonde kid who was always talking. A brown-haired girl who wore a cape with a Playboy insignia on it said, Private is what you feel inside. Everything else is public. The girl with the longest red hair Ron had ever seen said, I don't agree with that. My family knows a lot of things about me that I wouldn't want to see published in a newspaper or even mentioned in this class. Irene turned around to watch her as she spoke. It's a party this weekend. Your father turns to you in front of all your friends and asks you how much you love him. What do you say? That is a stupid question, said the redhead. Lashley laughed. Why would you call it stupid? Because he should know how much I love him and not embarrass me like that. The girl was almost indignant, and Ron agreed with her. Then she said, I'd tell him, I guess. Lashley wasn't finished. Would you give him your private or public answer? What do you mean? Lashley returned to the board. What is the difference between what is public and what is private? No one's hand went up. He let the question rest like a fog moving in the twilight. He lit his pipe, wandered over to the windows. Ron hadn't taken his eyes or concentration off of what was going on for a second. He was convinced that every action was in some way a tie into what he was talking about. All right, said Lashley, let's drop back some. A parent owes a child certain obligations. What were they? The tension was relieved when several people contributed with easy, rapid answers. Ron didn't say anything. He waited to see if everything he thought of was brought out. It was. It surprised him. You could sit there quiet sometimes and still get your point represented. Okay, said Lashley. Now let's go the other way. What obligations do children owe to their parents? The blonde kid pointed to himself and said, What do we owe them? Lashley sucked on his pipe and smiled condescendingly. You got the idea. I know what I owe my old man, said the kid, making a fist, and one of these days I'm going to get him good and drunk and give it to him. Lashley threw his head back and laughed his hoarse laugh. That's very good. He picked up the tempo by speaking quickly. Ron watched about 6 quick words go up. Is that all? Said Lashley rhetorically. I guess so. Let's see the hands of the people who put their answers on this side. A group of hands, 5 female, 1 male, lifted into the air. Lashley made mention of it. Ron stuck up his hand. What's that supposed to mean to us? I suppose it could mean that women have a stronger sense of family responsibility than men do. That's ridiculous, said Ron. Well, just hang on for a minute there and we'll see if we can make sense of it for you. Lashley never returned to Ron's point. Ron waited for there to be some coming back to it for the rest of the class. The last minutes were taken up with a reading of Nothing Will Come of Nothing exchange that occurs during the first act of King Lear. Ron felt tricked when the class ended. He told himself that what he said was too much trouble for Lashley to deal with. I decided on a topic for the theme of my paper. Hadn't you already decided on something, said Lashley? No, said Ron. What is it? He stuck his pipe in his mouth and fumbled for his matches. I want to write about how different writers have reacted to wars, said Ron proudly. What writers and what wars? Lashley was leaning back in his chair, smiling at Irene, who sat at her desk, holding up a book. What about people who are still alive and this war? Nobody has really written anything about this war yet, said Lashley. What about Dillon and Ginsburg? Said Ron, like he held a trump card. Dillon's not a poet at all, and Ginsburg's second-rate at best. Lashley knew, of course, that several other writers had written about Vietnam, but he was almost certain that Ron didn't, and the lesson was to have him work hard at something. Ron thought about how to tell him that he thought he was a jerk-off. He decided to tell him with the Ginsburg thing first. After he told him what he thought of his comment about Dillon, there wouldn't be a lot more to say. What do you mean, second rate? He's an imitation of Whitman, and he's not as good, said Lashley crossly. He leaned forward and tamped down his pipe. Ron remembered that Whitman had written a long thing about himself. Ron had been told to read it in high school, but it was confusing, and he didn't read it. Ginsburg was in the flesh now, though. His brain was alive and reaching for answers that hadn't been discovered. That was true of Dillon, also. What Whitman thought about the Civil War wasn't going to change anything, but if more people didn't wake up real the fuck soon... Look, man, said Ron, as Lashley sneered. Ginsburg is a goddamn good poet, and you just don't understand Dillon at all. Lashley studied him quietly. So, what you want to write is a piece of research comparing Dillon and Ginsburg's position on the war. Sort of, said Ron. It sounded like he wanted to do, but the way Lashley pronounced Dillon's name left him feeling sure that they didn't have the same thing in mind. Lashley made him sound stupid, take it for granted. I think it's beneath your capabilities that you really won't learn anything. But go ahead. Ron stared at his shoes. It was difficult for him to say, but he mumbled out. Is there something else that you want me to do? He looked up in time to catch Lashley grinning over at Irene. Anger flared up again, but he was confused by the sense of embarrassment that he was feeling. He clenched his fist. He needed to hit something, the blackboard, the wall, anything to keep from hitting Lashley, he told himself. He couldn't act like he used to. He remembered the time back at D'Amato's bowling alley back in Newark. He hadn't thrown a strike when he needed to and lost the game for his team. The other team cheered when he put the ball right in the pocket and left a five pin. No ball, they screamed. Ron headed for the stucco wall and pounded it until everybody was quiet. He put a large hole in the wall and his hand was dripping blood onto the alleys when he came back over to the lane. His friend Billy came over with a towel and told him to wipe his hand. Ron was surprised when he saw the blood. You're a fucking animal, said Billy. The topic has to be yours, said Lashley. Look, I'll just redo the other paper, said Ron. That's fine, said Lashley, grinning. He hadn't wanted to return the grin, but did, without knowing why he was grinning. On his way back to the newspaper room, he was stopped by Dean of Students Marvell. He looked well-groomed as always. Ron, can I see you in my office for a few minutes? Do you mind if I get a coffee first? I'm really dragging, you know? I'll be waiting for you, said Marvell. The same smile that Ron had left him with seemed still on his face when Ron came back into Marvell's office holding his container. Would you close the door, Ron? Ron sat down and took his pie slice out of his container lid. He wanted to be sure not to spill any coffee in Marvell's office. Do you know anything about this last issue of the commuter being brought over to Westfield, Cranford and Scotch Plains high schools? I don't think so, said Ron. It looked like the commuter was a lot of high school students here, and the commuter is free to anybody who takes it. All three principals said that large bundles of the paper were brought to their schools on the morning of the moratorium. They attributed the abnormal number of cuts that they had to the paper's unauthorized presence. It would have been better if they'd canceled Cal classes and sent their students over to learn something, said Ron quickly. He took out his cigarettes and lit one. Morvell watched him light it. Do you have an ashtray? Said Ron. Ron took a drag on the cigarette before he realized what he'd done, blew smoke at Morvell. I think our discussion is over, said Morvell without a smile. Surprised by what he'd done, Ron left the office without saying another word. He saw no smoking sign on Morvell's wall. He wondered if he was in trouble. Marvel seemed to know that he'd done it. Hank and his mother sat in silence at the kitchen table. She had been reading a book when he arrived. It lay face down on the table. She stared at the cover. Hank was watching her with a sense of calm within him. At the very quiet times when they were alone, he liked her company. "Are you going to stay for dinner, Hank?" she asked without looking up. Hank, his watch read, 1:30. I don't think so. Have you decided when you want to go back to school yet? She whispered, sounding to Hank like a kitchen librarian. Maybe in January. You know how your father and I feel about your education. Hank shook his head. It's not going to be a problem. Her face was pudgy and smooth. She had no chin. Aunt Margaret was asking for you. How's Aunt Margaret? He said in a sarcastic voice he always used when he talked about any of his relatives. She used to like it when he wasn't taken by any of them, but now it made her want to cry. I don't like Aunt Margaret much either, she whispered. You never did, smiled Hank. She gave me $50 for you and Jolie. Hank's face got bright and stared into her eyes. Are you really married to this girl? Yes. She looked back down on the cover of the book and handed him two envelopes. One had Aunt Margaret's $50, the other had $40 in it. That was from her. It was a $90 visit. His value was on the rise. Hank, your father wants to know if you want him to find you a job. A job? With him? That wouldn't be a good idea, said Hank firmly. She agreed. But what should I tell him? That it's too far for me to travel. Okay, he'll believe that, said Hank's mother. Hank went into his old room to look around. She was already there. She fills up every crevice that doesn't get used daily. Everything could be a closet. His father said that she'd always been like that. She would visibly squirm when he asked her about it. Hank saw his bowling ball in the bag and looked at it with disdain. At least I'm not taking that with me ever again. On his way home, he stopped off and brought Jolie a pair of lace silky panties and a bottle of champagne. She was never sleepy when she just got home from work, and he was going to wait up for her. They would live it up on the $90 he'd brought home when her days off came. Ron heard the phone ringing as he opened the door. He heard Marjorie say, "Who's calling, please?" in a voice that was meant for George or him. "I'm home," he called from the driveway. "All right, Chris. I'll have him call you when he gets here." "I am here," said Ron, holding out his hand for the phone. She waved him away and said, "So long." "What did you do that for?" "I'm expecting an important call. You can call him back later." She looked at the name she'd written. "Do you know him?" He's the president of the student council, said Ron, trying to make the title sound as important as possible. He sounds like a kid on the phone. Ron's face hardened. What call are you waiting for? The place I called for dinner reservations tomorrow night. They said they would have to call me back to verify our seating. That's the important call? He turned around and started to walk back out of the house. Where are you going? She called. To use the phone booth on the corner, said Ron, dejectedly. Wait a minute. Here's $5. Get me a box of Tocotex from the drugstore. He stared at her in disbelief. Why did she do things like this to him? He'd never understand. He felt like she was making him into a pretzel. I gotta get out of here, he said as he walked to the corner. Chris had called to say that Rebecca and Patty had everything set up. Far out, said Ron. Then he felt stupid for having said it. Where do you want to go? The traditional movies or bowling alley, said Chris. They're both fine. It would be great if Chris picked up bowling. You and I are picking them up at Rebecca's house. I'll drive, said Chris. Come over whenever you want. We're supposed to meet them at 7:30.